I will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, though.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our Patreon sponsors. If you'd like to become a Patreon sponsor for the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, please go to our official website, which is bodybuildinglegendsshow.com, and you'll see the link in the upper right-hand corner for becoming a Patreon member yourself. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. On today's show, we are going to go back 40 years again to the 1980s, and we're going to talk about the 1984 Nationals. On our last show, we did this with the 1984 Mr. Olympia contest that Lee Haney won, which was a really historic contest in the history of bodybuilding when it comes to Mr. Olympia events. So today we're going to go back to the 1984 Nationals, which was also a very, very exciting show. It was won by Mike Christian. This was only the third MPC National since it started in 1982. So the first year in 1982, Lee Haney won that competition. And then Bob Parrish won in 1983. And then finally, Mike Christian got his win and his pro card by winning the 1984 MPC Nationals. Now, back then, the only way you could turn professional was you had to win your class at the MPC Nationals. Then you had to go on and compete in the IFBB Mr. Universe. So all the class winners from the MPC Nationals would represent the American team, and they would go over to the Mr. Universe and they would try to win their class there. If you didn't win your class at the Mr. Universe, you had to go back to the Nationals the next year and start the process all over again. So this was really the only way back then to get a pro card. Now, of course, they give pro cards out at almost every national show, and sometimes they give multiple pro cards in each division, in each class. So there's many, many, many more pro cards. What this has done, I think, in my opinion, is kind of watered down the competition. And you don't get these extraordinary events like the 1984 Nationals, where the quality and the competition was just unbelievable. So that's what we're going to do today. We're going to talk about the MPC Nationals from 1984. I'm going to read some articles from Iron Man Magazine, Muscle and Fitness, Flex. And then I have a Muscle Mag International, which covers the Mr. Universe contest that took place right after the MPC Nationals. So we'll go through all of those today when we start in a second. I got some bad news that I just saw on Facebook before I started this recording. John Bubb, who was a great bodybuilder from England, he competed in many historic NABBA Mr. Universe events. John has passed away, unfortunately. John competed in the NABBA Universe from 1967 through 1971. So, of course, those were some very historic competitions, as you can well imagine, against Arnold Schwarzenegger and Bill Pearl. In 1967, he was third place in the tall class. Bill Pearl won that contest, of course. And then in 1968, John went in the pro division at the NABBA Universe and took second in the tall class to Arnold. And then in 1969, he went back and he competed in the pro division again in the tall class. This time he took fourth place. He was behind Arnold, Serge Dubray, and Dennis Tenorino. And then in 1970, he was in that very historic NABBA Universe competition with Arnold and Reg Park and Dave Draper, and John was right behind them. And then in 1971, John competed in the NABBA Universe for the final time, and he took fourth place again, and this was behind Bill Pearl, Sergio, and Reg Park. So John competed against some real legends of the sport, and unfortunately, John has now passed on, as I said. So rest in peace to John Bubb, and all the best to his family and friends. I did get an email from Mike, so I want to read that. He said, "Hey, John, the articles from the 1984 Olympia were excellent to listen to. I like the idea of different writers' perspectives. It is a contest I've watched so many times over the years. This is a great idea for more. As I sit here drinking coffee, it's 5:30 a.m. in England. I'm watching an old school training motivation on YouTube before I head to the gym. Old school still works. Thanks again, John. Best wishes, Mike." All right, Mike, thank you for your email. I appreciate that. And I'm glad you're enjoying these articles. I'm still trying to get some guests, guys, but just doesn't seem like it's working out lately. Nobody's getting back to me. Maybe people are busy, but no one seems to be interested in doing interviews. So just keep trying. All right. Well, let's get on with these articles. Let's start with Muscle and Fitness magazine. This was from the March 1985 issue. So this came out a couple months after the competition took place. which I believe was in October of 84. So this was written by Jeff Everson, who was the editor-in-chief of Muscle and Fitness at the time. And it says, the 84 MPC Nationals in search of the Golden Fleece. Daniels, Natashak, Gaspari, and Christian win. It says, in the old days, Jason, son of Aeson, summoned the top drawer heroes of Greece to join him in a mission fraught with peril to find the Golden Fleece. This wondrous wool could do all sorts of stuff, raise the dead, stuff like that. Embarking in the good ship Argo, the Argonauts, get it, set out upon a voyage across uncharted seas to far distant lands. They encountered some hairy adventures, those Argonauts, and faced up to adversaries that would stick at nothing, including the Harpies. Things got really rough there for a while, but the Argonauts prevailed. While I'm not gullible enough to think winning national bodybuilding championships enables anyone to raise the dead, I do know that once any bodybuilder wins the big one, he can pretty much write his own ticket from then on. Consequently, each year, bodybuilders gather to end their own search for the Golden Fleece and do battle with any Harpies who might oppose them. Mike Christian's Argonautic voyage began long ago and intensified in San Jose in 1983. That was the night Mike finished third in the Nationals behind Rory Liedemeyer and Bob Paris. It was a decision Mike thought inaccurate at best. Accepting the yoke of many sweaty days and nights to come, Mike holed up at Gold's Gym in Venice. He made up his mind that come 1984 in New Orleans, any man who dared cross his path had better be the closest thing to Michelangelo's wildest fantasy on his best day, or be prepared to be driven into seclusion. Of course, I heard all the talk, the bold claims of confidence that spewed forth from the mouths of the so-called mighty in direct proportion to the number of amino acid capsules they digested. Somebody was doing a good business in 1984. No less than three star body men had informed me in exclusive interviews that not only would each win the Nationals in New Orleans, but would wreck holy hell at the Universe in Vegas and reign supreme at the Mr. Olympia in New York. All of this would occur in record-breaking succession. Somehow, it seemed too good to be true. Mike Christian, you see, never made any such claim to me, but he defeated the three men who did. Christian won because he was the biggest, hardest, best-proportioned man in the show. No one complained much. However, before the show, my typical piss-optimism hit me as always. Like the guy who invented the word around major physique contests, I'm neither a pessimist nor an optimist. I'm a pess-optimist. I believe the best will come, but it just won't be good enough. Someone's always got to lose. And when you spend a good part of your adult life chasing golden fleece that may turn out to be a myth, losing causes nothing less than an acute case of peptic ulcers. My ulcer started as soon as I left the airport and got into a taxi. I didn't ask for a wrong-way excursion along Canal Street, but I got one anyway. Entering the Ramada Inn was my second mistake. No one enjoys elevators that take an hour to climb 10 floors, and no one savors room service that takes longer than supply-side economics. It was left for Mike Christian to supply the Pepto-Bismol. Corey and I spotted Big Mike coming toward us in the Ramada lobby. Resplendent in a bulky white sweatsuit, he bounded toward us and hugged Corey, his ever-sunny smile out in full force. Sometimes I think it's Corey that people bound toward, not me. With nary a nod in my direction, Mike exclaimed, I feel so good, so strong. I'm cut and big as a house. Jeff, I can't wait until tomorrow. Intelligence being imbued in the Everson genes, I sensed Mike was confident. In contrast to Mike's exuberance and affability, I recalled any chance encounter with the Liedemeyer clan in LAX. Rory was pensive and quiet. Not that he wasn't confident. The biceps and deltoids literally ached to bulge free from the confines of his sweatsuit. But Rory had somehow lost fully one quarter of himself since the last time I'd seen him. This was not the gregarious 285-pound giant I had interviewed only 3 months earlier. Although wife Cynthia and daughter Sasha, forever by Rory's side, looked unperturbed, I feared a replay of 1981 when Rory removed his sweats to reveal the incredible shrinking man. Instead of entering at the powerful heavyweight he was, Rory had opted to cascade down into the light heavyweight class, where he ended up fading away next to Bulkmaster Tim Belknap. Time would tell this year. At the prejudging hall, the crowd turned electric. The heavyweights were coming on soon. As I chatted with Mr. Sunshine, Peter Grimkowski, about the upturn of t-shirt sales at the Gold's Gym in Outer Mongolia, I caught Matt Mendenhall out of the corner of my eye. He looked enormous next to his minuscule wife, Lori. Moving briskly, Matt was impervious to the onslaught of dreamy-eyed autograph seekers. Today, Mendenhall was all business. Not that I want to get ahead of myself, though, because the little guys meant business, too. In 1981, I competed against Paul Daniels at the National Pairs Championship. He teamed up with Gail Schroeder. I was with Corina. To say Daniels hasn't improved much since then is like asking if the bear did anything in the woods. I mean, this guy has made some gains. Paul had the overall balance, proportion, and enough muscle to defeat a lot of beef in the lightweight class. In most of the muscularity comparisons, it was Daniels, Joe Dawson, and Dean Tornabene. From where I sat, Tornabene had the better calves, thighs, and abdominals, and he seemed to know it. However, Dean was lighter than usual and might have given away some chest and arm size to Daniels because of it. Joe Dawson, if not as thick as Daniels in the upper body or as Tornabene in the lower body, had the sharpest muscularity and was the best poser of the three. Joe's wares were enough to move him into second behind Daniels, but ahead of Tornabene, who ended up with the bronze. Tornabene, who expected to win, wasn't the first man in the show miffed about his finish. Perhaps even bigger surprises in this class were the fourth and fifth placements of Jose Guzman and Dr. Jesse Lujan, respectively. Lujan, who won this class last year, looked a tad flat, but coasted through his posing like a neurosurgeon patching a parietal lobe. For some reason, both Jesse and Jose looked better standing in the back under the shady light and less impressive under the front overheads. It appeared that the lighting benefited those athletes with darker skin tones. Jose Guzman dropped down from the middleweights. Following the prejudging, he told me that he would be very difficult to find the motivation to continue if he lost this year. Guzman had crisp, well-defined torso musculature and a set of triceps thicker than Arnold's accent, but he failed to project in the lineup, standing in what looked to be an uncomfortable position. He looked just as uneasy accepting fourth place. A lot of the decisions in this class were greeted with disdain, but it appeared the judges placed the men with the same precision that Juan Valdez exhibits when picking coffee beans. When the large group of middleweights ascended the stage, I figured wide-shouldered, narrow-waisted John Araneta would win, but then I never was good in trigonometry. Araneta's physique flows like Leonard Bernstein's hands on opening night. Like Lujan before him, his posing is superb. He has no visible weaknesses. With great pectorals, striated thick triceps, and round, full muscle bellies. What he doesn't have is ripped to shreds hardness, like a Mike Christian or John Natashak. Still, his proportion and shape are unequaled. The crowd was just as surprised as Araneta when he finished second. John, however, figuring next year would be his baby, took his second place very well. Besides, losing to Natashak, who went on to win the world championships, is no disgrace. I missed Natashak in the prejudging, but the judges did not. I have sent in my card as penance. John had a balanced and defined body. He didn't have the Lindsay McKinney thickness, but no one had his abdominals or thigh definition. While the others had minimal weaknesses, John had none, so he won his class. Lindsay McKinney placed third. He reminded me of Chuck Williams, a regular prophet of mass number two. I thought he had the best upper body in his class, with pectorals and shoulders heavier than a Rick Wayne discourse on the Granada invasion. He didn't look shabby anywhere else either, but he still dropped down from second last year. Michigan would be cold this winter. Randall Samuels posed to just be good to me, and the judges were. If Samuels continues to improve, his fourth place finish won't hold up next year. He ought to be battling Araneta for the gold. Lee Labrada had the biggest biceps in the class with a tremendously muscular back. He seemed happy with fifth. At 24, like Samuels, he also is young enough to be battling for first in a year or two. As I mentioned last month, the depth in both the lightweights and the middleweights was unbelievable, and the judges did an excellent job of ferreting out the top five. The competition was of such quality that an entire new group of top five men could appear in either class next year. The light heavyweights numbered 39, and with names such as Maldonado, Marsh, Gaspari, Valente, Bucci, Wiggins, Ritter, Youngs, Kemper, Hart, and Terwilliger, we knew we were in for fireworks. First and second boiled down to a battle between experience and mass. Moses Maldonado was not as sharp as last year or the year before that, but he had such beautiful symmetry and shape that he couldn't be counted out of the gold. And what he lacked in hardness and muscularity, he made up for in stage presence. In the evening show, Moses appeared drenched in oil, a mistake that made him look less muscular than he actually was. Nevertheless, he did a nice routine to Chariots of Fire. This time, though, his act was only second best. If Moses posed like a gliding downhill skier, Richard Gasparri came on like a jackhammer. Powerful and forceful, Richard was. Gasparri, playing his Dragon Slayer role to the hilt, displaying enormous ripped thighs with more than a normal portfolio of upper body mass, he looked impressive, to say the least. Even so, Gasparri is a natural heavyweight, and so at 190 pounds, he looked wiry and a bit flat compared to a week earlier in the gym. Richard knew his body weight loss would make his thighs smaller, improving his proportion and overall symmetry. And he also suspected that if he came in as a heavyweight, he might get lost between Christian and Mendenhall. The only thing he lost as a light heavyweight was his national championship virginity. Tom Terwilliger and J.J. Marsh both thought they would win. Terwilliger is big and shapely without any glaring weak points. He's a rhythmic poser, too. Other than the strengths of Gasparri and Maldonado, the only reason I can offer for his third-place finish might have been a torso that's too powerfully developed. Many bodybuilders overdevelop their abdominal musculature, which makes their waistlines look too big. DeFerro, Menser, and Belknap are examples. Tom might take a tip from Gasparri, who stopped training his waist for a year so his obliques would atrophy. Not that Tom is too big there, but it's the only reason for his third that I can imagine. Many fans expected him to win, and I'm sure he will someday. After the prejudging, J.J. Marsh was so fired up that he skipped entering the couples competition with Heidi Miller. Heidi was noticeably hurt. What could have been a couples victory ended up in a fourth place for J.J. Score him one for determination and zero for sensitivity. J.J.'s another guy who's improved tremendously in the last couple of years. He has everything it takes, and in a year or two, he could stand on square one. It hasn't been a good year for handsome Steven Ryder, who finished fifth. First, there was the emotional upheaval with a close friend, and then Steve suffered an abdominal hernia, which necessitated a detailed repair job and a long recovery period. Steve just didn't have time to put everything together this year, but he was thankful the surgeon did. When Steve gets his chest thickness up, he'll be on his way. Which brings us to the heavyweights. I hadn't seen a mastodon since visiting the La Brea Tar Pits, but 249 James Helwig from Atlanta refreshed my memory. The rest of the heavies were mammoth. It was no secret to the audience whoever won the heavyweights would win the overall title this year. I suppose bodybuilding has something in common with economics, that is, progress is the harbinger of inequality. Like Helwig, each year the majority of men who are exposed to good nutrition and good training continue to get bigger than ever. Those who are not so fortunate continue to fall behind. That's progress, I guess. Take Matt Mendenhall, for example. In 1982, when he finished second to Lee Haney, he weighed 212 pounds. In 1983, although he looked terrible after a skirmish with the virus, he weighed 219 pounds. In New Orleans, Matt looked his best yet at 238 pounds. This is at a height of 5'10½". When Matt came out and hit his first pose, the front lat spread, I thought he had the show in the bag. He looked enormous, and his leg muscles shone like the Milky Way. His calf and thigh muscle bellies redefined the word round. His only weaknesses was a half gallon of excess water, which showed in the lack of crisp back muscularity. I pointed out before that big men tend to store water under the skin in the lower back. I don't know why, but I've seen it time and time again. Matt is popular with the audience. In fact, only one man attracted more attention in New Orleans, and that was Joe Weider himself. As Joe and I walked into the New Orleans World's Fair area, a young jiggly brunette stuck a crumpled piece of paper into Joe's hand and fled. The note read, "You need to have new pictures for the magazines. You're much better looking in person." Tongue in cheek, Joe turned to me and said, "I must get 40 of these a day." So that's why they call him the Master Blaster. The ovation Matt got when he posed was tremendous. I continued in my belief that he would win. Then Mike Christian came out with deltoids bigger than the goddamn moon. Here was a man with an upper body harder than iron ore and ripped up as John DeLorean's life. I started to second guess myself. Mike's legs had improved to such an extent that they no longer appeared inferior to his upper body. He posed with overflowing confidence and continued to smack the judges with arm, chest, and shoulder shots. The crowd waffled. Would Mike Christian's vaunted hardness and mass overcome Matt Mendenhall's shape and proportion? I thought it was a toss-up, but I honestly figured Mike would win, knowing that the refined look is necessary to win today. Mike did win, and Matt finished in his somewhat familiar runner-up spot. What happened to Rory Liedemeyer, you ask? Good question. Earlier in the year, even 2 months before the show, Rory looked like an invincible giant. Then he showed up in New Orleans at 211 pounds, without the type of hardness you'd expect of him at that weight. Clearly, something had gone awry. Not that he looked bad. In fact, the judges inclined toward proportion, shape, symmetry, and posing ability might easily have placed him first. But today's game required more than that. You got to be big and bad and hard, too. Rory wasn't, and he placed fifth. Jeff Williams, the East Coast giant, came in at 229 pounds and had the most muscle per square inch of any man in the show. His thighs approached Platt's proportions, and his upper bodies began to compare to Lee Haney's for overall mass. I fear Jeff may actually be getting too much mass on his frame. In other words, he's got more than his frame can handle comfortably right now. Jeff is as big as he needs to be and will undoubtedly go to work on improving his aesthetics. More than anything, those efforts will move Jeff into the number one spot in short order. The 208-pound Oklahoman Jeff Sneed placed fourth with a well-balanced physique with no weak points. All Jeff needs is more exposure and to keep his muscle growth on a steady, proportional pattern. Next year's wide open, and Jeff has got to be aware of that more than anyone. And so ended another year of searching for the golden fleece. People have different reactions to losing. Some, like heavyweight Larry Opiella, took it very well. His comments were, "Someone's got to win. We can't all lose." And "I lift all year long just to be bigger than Kay Baxter." Some, like Matt Mendenhall, approached loss without overt demonstrations of emotion. "All I can do is hang in there and return again," Matt said. Mike Christian didn't have things to worry about. Mike's victory was sweet and rewarding. To me, the most important thing about it was that it reassured me that big, strong men can still cry. All right. They didn't mention it in the article, but I want to mention that Rich Gaspari, when we won the light heavyweight class, he actually won without getting a first place vote from any judge. He got all second place votes, but the scores were so varied among Moses Maldonado, Tom Terwilliger, and J.J. Marsh. They all got the first place votes, but there was nobody unanimous in first, so Rich ended up winning. So that was interesting. All right, let's go to Iron Man magazine. This is from the March 1985 issue, kind of a shorter article. This one is written by Dave Sawyer, and it says they had a party at the World's Fair in New Orleans on October 19th, and everybody came. 147 physique athletes from 31 states came to Creole country to compete in the nation's highest amateur bodybuilding competition, the NPC National Championships. It was by far the biggest nationals in NPC history. The computerized entry list included 25 lightweights, 46 middleweights, 40 light heavyweights, and 36 heavyweights. Trivia fans will note that the total muscular bulk was a stage-crushing 26,962 pounds, more than 13 tons. Since there were so many competitors, the judging committee decided to invoke a little-known NPC rule, which provides for an elimination round that reduces each weight class to approximately 15 men. The finalists are then called back for comparison posing and placement. Competitors eliminated in the first round are not placed. The procedure greatly expedited the prejudging and made it possible for the judges to concentrate their efforts on accurate placement of the winners in each weight class. In the lightweight class, Paul Daniels and Joe Dawson were the big winners in this year's lightweight competition. Placing only eighth and ninth last year, Paul and Joe moved all the way up to first and second places this year. Dean Tornaveni, 1983 runner-up, dropped to third, and Jose Guzman again placed fourth. Jesse Lujan, last year's winner, finished a disappointing fifth place. The lightweight men may have weighed less than 154 pounds, but they look like middleweights. The tremendous muscular size that some of these men have attained is truly amazing. Middleweight class. Almost every year, some unknown will appear on the scene and shock the returning veterans by winning first place. John Natashak, 28, from New Jersey, was an easy winner, with four of the seven judges giving him first place. John Arneta and Lindsay McKinney had to settle for second and third places, a reversal of their 1983 placing. John had improved enough to overtake McKinney, but was stopped in his quest for the title by Natashak. What a disappointment to be in the best shape of your life, only to be defeated by an unknown. 1985 should be John's year, barring any further surprises. Randy Samuels and Lee Labrada turned in impressive performances by taking fourth and fifth places in their first nationals. In the light heavyweight class, 1982, Moses Maldonado was the light heavyweight winner. Then last year, an upstart named Chuck Williams came to San Jose and let everyone know that he was a champion. Moses was determined to win back his title this year, and he would have done just that, except for Richard Gaspari, 21 years old, from California, who was a heavyweight last year. The judging was close, but when it was all over, Gaspari had won by 3 points. Taking third place was Thomas Terwilliger, another newcomer, with J.J. Marsh and Steven Reeder rounding out the top five. And the heavyweight class, the big men from last year's heavyweight competition, Mike Christian, Jeff Williams, Matt Mendenhall, and Rory Liedemeyer were all back and ready for some heavy-duty action. This was no Sunday school picnic. It was war. The 1983 judging had been very controversial, and all these men were hungry for a rematch. Mike Christian, at 225 pounds, was more muscular than ever and clearly in the best shape of his life. Jeff Williams, at 229, was awesome. And Matt Mendenhall, at 237, was huge, but not quite as sharp as Christian. The big disappointment was Rory Liedemeyer, who at 211, looked tired and failed to display the special charisma for which he is so famous. As everyone knows, Rory is blessed with tremendous genetic potential. If he can just find and maintain the right combination of body weight, muscularity, and definition, the world's greatest poser could be a national champion. When the judging was over, Christian had won by a vote of 6-1. Gus Salerno was the only judge that didn't have Mike in first place. Matt Mendenhall was the unanimous second place winner, and Jeff Williams took third. Jeff Sneed and Rory Liedemeyer tied for fourth place, with Sneed winning the tiebreaker by a vote of 4-3. Fifth quarter. While the competition was the best ever, the contest facilities were definitely inadequate. For example, the Meat Hotel was located almost 2 miles from the World's Fair Amphitheater. Taxi drivers refused to use their meters and instead charged $12 one way for a group of four athletes. Checking into the hotel was an ordeal in itself, with long lines and delays of up to an hour. At the outdoor amphitheater, huge clouds of diesel smoke drifted by, creating a sort of Los Angeles-type smog on the stage. Passing boats blowing their horns added an extra dimension to the posing music. The overall effect was to create a carnival atmosphere rather than the professionally staged theatrical presentation we've come to expect for our national championships. Our physique athletes worked very hard to reach the Nationals, and they deserve the very best. Next year, the Nationals will be held at the beautiful Miami Beach Convention Center. Several first-class hotels are located adjacent to the center. The promoters have promised to make the 1985 Nationals the best ever. All right, let's go on to our next article. This one comes from Flex Magazine, and this is the March 1985 issue, and it is written by Denny. Denny, who used to write for Muscle Training Illustrated, says the 1984 MPC Nationals, Whistlin' Dixie. Electric lights burned brightly across the country for the night of October 19th as bodybuilding buffs waited for news of the 148 state-of-the-art American physique saints who marched into New Orleans' Liggett and Myers Amphitheater for the 1984 MPC Nationals. No one in the MPC White House, not even promoter James Gobert, expected this wave of entrants, all singing, "Oh, I want to be in that top five number." There's little doubt that the pre-event tension cramped the contestants as if they'd slipped some bad amino acid. They all knew that not making the cut would devastate months and months of careful preparation. In the air hung the bittersweet yet acrid stench of loneliness in a crowd, of each man knowing that being number one is really the only game in town. During the event, MPC Chairman Jim Mannion would ruminate about the ones who didn't cut the casualty list. Initially, everyone was judged during the comparisons, but we had to pare down the classes to the top 15 in each. It was done for the sake of accuracy and the sanity of the judging panel. After the top 15 were placed, a blanket placing of 16 was given to the remaining contestants. In the past, only in the top five of each class of the Nationals made it to the evening event. But as Mannion noted, we can't do that anymore. Couldn't do it here. The quality and dedication of these men is too extraordinary. In the future, we'll opt to have the top 10 placers of each class present a total posing routine during the main event. We'll also adjust the number of qualifying events so that entry requirements will limit the field for the Nationals. All of these guys here are so good, they're crucifying my judging panel. Judge Gus Salerno, New Jersey MPC director, put it this way: you need a set of wide-eyed eyeballs for this event. And he wasn't Whistling Dixie. What with 27 entrants in the lightweight class, 45 in the middleweight, 37 in the light heavy, and 39 in the heavy. It was a difficult contest to judge. It's early morning, and Richard Gaspari is riding the bus to the amphitheater where prejudging will take place. Gaspari, who trained on the West Coast for a year for this event, is proud. His formerly blocky physique has undergone major changes because of his training. "It's mine. I feel ready to go," he says, a statement he later proves the hard way. For the moment, he simply follows this up with a nervous, "It's a good thing to bring some bread along for the complex carbs." Meanwhile, hidden in the depths of the arena are the pound checkers, those whose crucial tasks often go unnoticed. Gentlemen like Ralph Countryman, Doug Jerry, and Dave Sawyer, aided by Richard Cavalier, are supervising the necessary class weigh-ins, while upstairs, Jimmy the Man Mannion takes the judging catbird seat on this muggy New Orleans day in October, ready for the biggest, baddest set of amateur flesh to ever hit the Deep South. Elsewhere, Rick Wayne is holding sport count with the help of Artie Zeller and his camera, and Big Joe Weider is thumbing his stash as if playing the Abbott and Costello routine of who's on first to determine the next superstar. He alternates this with running backstage to personally supervise the photography of certain athletes who've just made the cut. Pressing the camera button on famed stage right is, of course, photo ace John Balick. As the contestants for the final lineup edge into the platform for prejudging, real pain, both emotional and physical, are having their way backstage. John Kemper is in the throes of dehydration, voice almost totally gone, but for a frog-like croak and massive cramps racking his legs to add to the sinister fear that he will stiffen under the pressure of comparisons. But to the rescue comes fellow New Jerseyan and competitor Casey Kucharik, and with the help of a dip into Kucharik's potassium K-ration allocated for use in the platform combat zone, Kemper slides by, placing sixth in a light heavyweight class. Casey comes in seventh. Much maligned by those in bodybuilding's inner circle, yet lauded by the fans, is champion Rory Liedelmeyer, one of California and the sport's most superb posers. Why he is sometimes attacked is anyone's guess, but the guy is rather reserved, even aloof. At this event, the athlete explains backstage the secret of his posing. When I pose, I think of my wife, child, and family, and all those close to me that I care about. I practice posing for the moves, but when I take the platform, I just do what comes naturally for those special people. Such a comment doesn't seem compatible with the Teflon mentality attributed to this man, but at least we forget huge busloads of his fans come to see him. They obviously love him, and they seem to tear things up in anger when he loses. Maybe it's because a man who thinks of his family first is the best champ of all. Tom Terwilliger, the light heavyweight champ from New York, who plays Brutus in the Federal Express TV commercial, sidestepped a skin tone problem at this year's Nationals. In the past, his skin has openly rejected rays from such places as Acapulco in Florida, where you could cook an ostrich egg on the sand. But said he, "I used the tanning salon for about 2 weeks, going slow to maintain proper control over my skin pigmentation chemistry. I also used Dioderm as a cosmetic aid, a formula used by a lot of top bodybuilders. The last day before the event, I added Clinique Non-Streak Bronzer. The whole approach worked out pretty good for me." California's Rick Valente pads the backstage during prejudging like a panther trying to maintain a modulated view of the stressful competitive proceedings. "I'm just trying to enjoy the whole sport for the moment. The diet's been crazy. The training and the fighting have almost killed me. Now I want to remember what it's really for. I need to enjoy the posing and throw out all the backstabbing bullshit that goes on with it. I'm staying in isolation here, paying attention to no one so I don't psych them out and I don't get psyched out. I just want to feel good all the way through and be cool when it's over." On the other hand, Bayonne Thunder John Natoshak is almost confidence flipola, in spite of his hot win at the NPC Eastern American Championships the week before. "Yeah, I'm scared, nervous, that's typical. I wasn't ready for last week. It was just a tune-up, something to build confidence for New Orleans. In my opinion, a middleweight will never take an overall national title. He's not as impressive size-wise as the pros in the heavier classes. I'll be glad to place in the top two or the top five in my class. I mean, my placing in the top two here would really freak me out." Johnny later gets his freak-out wish, taking the middleweight class against all the verbal odds others have tried ripping his ego with. Runner-up is California's John Araneta. In contrast to the many nervous contestants, one in the person of East Coast steroid virgin, Mike Ashley, says, "I see people here who are impressive, but I'm not in that frame of mind where I'm worrying about the next guy. I believe in my body, and I'll make it work for me. I train heavy and very hard, having been a powerlifter in the Army. I eat well and monitor my diet, learning about nutrition as much as I can. So far, it's working for me. I know I can be good with the guys who mess with drugs. Human potential is more important than chemical potential." Ashley is synonymous with platform death back in the East. He places ninth in the middleweights, a fine showing for his first national attempt. Hoping to use the NPC pearly gates to enter IFBB paradise by way of the IFBB World Championships a week later, Moses Maldonado enters a second time for qualification status after his first nationals win 2 years ago. His motivation? My wife pushed me. Monica Maldonado, when asked about this, explains, "It comes from the natural love we have for each other. He must do this thing to make himself happy, and he makes me happy by doing it. But whether he wins or loses, our love will be the same." Moses picked a rough second one to come back with, the nastiest competition in the MPC National Contest history. But he says, "It doesn't matter. It's great. Every event always has the same feeling for me. The attitude of a true bodybuilding sportsman." Having undergone and survived the preliminaries, comparisons, and mandatory posing, the top five from each class and a few exceptional extras return in the evening. Of those 20 class winners, the names most often mentioned throughout the day have been platform stuntmen Mike Christian, Matt Mendenhall, and Jeff Williams. Mike Christian makes his intentions clear when taking the stage during the day. "This is my show. It's mine. I'm going to win it." In the pump-up room, oiled to the gills, his frame sliding around the flat benches with extra heavy warm-up poundages, he says, "Hey, it's fun using heavy dumbbells while slipping around like an eel." Jeff Williams tells Flex he didn't come to compete with the other athletes. He's here to compete with himself, man's toughest taskmaster. He's gotten better since the 83 Nationals and says if he has to best himself again for 85, then he'll take the challenge. Once again, training within the borders of Pennsylvania where there are men and mountains, and sometimes you can't tell them apart. The night audience marvels at his posing as tectonic-like pectoral plates move in a staccato of seismic actions that obliterate his sternum from view. Some feel the platform immortality of both Mendenhall and Christian is being nationally threatened with Williams on stage. Finally comes kid Matt Mendenhall, whose quick rush to fame in the last 2 years defies description. The barbells and sweat have built him, and the magazines have glorified him. But inside the Goliath shell shines a well-balanced personality. "I try not to take seriously everything the magazines print about me since the press has been very favorable to me in my career, and I'm afraid it'll influence me in the wrong way. I look at myself as Matt Mendenhall, and also Matt Mendenhall, the bodybuilder, trying to keep the two apart. I definitely want my bodybuilding career separate from my personal life. I'm no different than a football player or a baseball player, except I carry my sporting equipment around with me." Originally from Cincinnati, Ohio, he has adopted the California lifestyle with his wife. He continues, "I'm confident the heavyweight class is mine because I'm at my all-time best." Matt ends up coming second, but he has fought a good fight. "I'm trying to have a good time here in New Orleans. I enjoy meeting the other competitors." Like Jeff Williams, Matt also underscores the fact that he's here to compete with himself. Having survived the judging panel comparisons and eventual classing, four men are left to head the class fields, and the stage lights Paul Daniels, a tricky, lean physique from Sacramento, California, seems to crunch and whip his laser definition like an electrical line. The judges turn on Paul, placing last year's lightweight winner Jesse Lujan in fifth. Maybe Jesse has slipped a little, but fifth place certainly is overdoing it, and the audience agrees. Tacoma Joe Dawson, playing the platform this night with 10 seconds of a robot mime, is correctly placed second, and Dean Tornabene climbs over New York's Jose Guzman for third. Middleweight champ is John Natashak, hawking his thick abs with four first places over John Arneta's one first. Remember that, it's important. Michigan's human hang glider, his lats are bad, my man. Lindsay McKinney, who receives two firsts, places third, with California's Randall Samuels in fourth and Lee Labrada, the Super Texan, in fifth. The light heavyweight win is heart-rending. Rich Gaspari wins, but on the sheets, he doesn't have one single first placing, whereas gentle deltoid Tom Terwilliger from New York, who takes third place, has three first placings. Even J.J. Marsh of Santa Ana, California, has three firsts, but he's placed fourth. How can this happen? Evidently, the scoring method used has a counterbalance for the highs and lows of scoring. The top high and low are canceled, and the remaining places are tallied. The scores? Gaspari 11, Maldonado 14, Terwilliger 15, Marsh 18, Reeder 22. And then come the bad news bears, the heavies. There's no disputing the winner. Mike Christian receives six first places against the seven-panel board, with Matt Mendenhall second, Williams third, Oklahoma's Jeff Snead in fourth, Rory Liedemeyer hits the platform basement coming in fifth. In losing the heavyweight, Liedemeyer displays a sincere congratulatory feeling for Christian, being one of the first to rush him after the win is announced. At first, expecting the worst from Rory's evident fifth-place pirouette and walk-off after the class pose-down, Christian quickly realizes the man is only going to get his trophy. Yes, that day in New Orleans were of many, many champs, but the leader of the MPC band was definitely Mike Christian. MPC national results, lightweight Paul Daniels first, Joseph Dawson second, Dean Tornabene third, Jose Guzman fourth, Jesse Lujan fifth, middleweight John Natashak first, John Arneda second, Lindsey McKinney third, Randall Samuels fourth, Lee Labrada fifth, light heavyweight Richard Gaspari first, Moses Baldonado second, Tom Terwilliger third, fourth, J.J. Marsh, fifth, Steven Reeder. And then heavyweight, Mike Christian first, Matt Mendenhall second, Jeff Williams third, Jeff Sneed fourth, and Rory Liedelmeyer fifth. And then, of course, next year in 1985, Lee Labrada went from fifth to first place, and then he became one of the top pro bodybuilders in the 1980s. And Richard Gaspari went on the next year in 1985 to take second at the Night of the Champions, gaining about, I think he went from one, I think it was like 187 at this contest to 215 at the Night of the Champions. Unbelievable. So then, of course, Rich became one of the top pro bodybuilders also in the 1980s. All right, guys, I got one more article, and this is about the IFBB Mr. Universe contest, which was held in Las Vegas a couple of weeks after the MPC Nationals. So the American team is there, and then they face an international crowd. It says, Christian crowned at the Palace. Clean sweep almost for the USA team. In Las Vegas, IFBB World Championships, Britain takes lightweight. This is written by Bob Kennedy, the owner of Muscle Mag International. There are no clocks or windows, so whether it's morning, noon, or night is anyone's guess. It's billed as the world's most luxurious hotel, and it is. For your money, you get a fantasy room with a sunken bath, complete with a huge mirror inlaid in the ceiling above your bed. Walk among the thousands of one-armed bandits or take an interest in the blackjack action, and you'll be given free drinks and refreshments, as many as you want. Everything is the best at Caesars Palace, Las Vegas. On this day, the world's best amateur bodybuilding champions were also on display. It's the IFBB World Championships, Mr. Universe, no less, and all Las Vegas knows about it. Almost everywhere you go, you hear the comments. On the elevator, one guy turns to another. Geez, I saw one. He must have been 6'7" tall with a waist smaller than mine, but his chest was out to here. Two elderly ladies mumble about all the huge men around. They ask their waitress to explain. Before she can answer, a fellow at the next table leans over and whispers, they're here from all over the world to enter the Mr. Universe contest. The two elderly women accept his words, and one concludes, wouldn't want to tangle with any of them. They look like monsters. The waitress smiled. Actually, you'd be surprised. Most of them are very friendly and nice, except they have some weird eating habits. I don't know how they get so big. Most of them will only drink plain tea, black coffee, or water. It seems everyone's here. Joe and Ben Weider, Wayne D'Amelia, photographers Art Zeller, Mike Nevue, and John Balick, Wag and Diane Bennett, Franco Colombo, Rick Wayne, Pete Grimkowski, Chris Dickerson, Eddie Sylvester, George Eiferman, Johnny Isaacs, Earl Menard, Jeff and Corey Everson, plus three Hercules of the screen, Brad Harris, Reg Park, and Lou Ferrigno. This was only the second time these IFBB World Championships have been held in the USA. Andy Olson, the program director for Caesars, is the man who made it all work so well. It was, in fact, the silver anniversary of the event, and every one of the 3,000 seats of the Caesars Sports Pavilion was filled with eager fans. Prior to the show itself, President Ben Weider chaired the IFBB Congress. Some 65 nations were represented, and each delivered their president's report and discussed future plans. We were seeing democratic representation at its best. Among the topics discussed were the banning of drugs, plans for future contests, and general furtherance of Ben Weider's IFBB cause of bodybuilding is good for nation building, a philosophy that had won Ben a Nobel Peace Prize nomination. He then requested that all delegates stand for 30 seconds silence for the late Oscar State. He helped us selflessly in so many ways. Oh, wow, that must have been the year Oscar died. The show is set. A grand all-country parade of champions came on stage from behind the audience, all to the sound mix of crackling fireworks, applause, and cheers. Each team was led by specially commissioned gladiators, replete with helmets, silver-plated armor. It all fit in grandly with the bigger-than-life spirit of Caesars. Britain's Will Sylvester, now in his mid-40s, was outstanding in the lightweight class. From the beginning, even in the relaxed comparisons, he looked like a winner. He edged out Germany's Hermann Hofend and a much improved Esmet Sadiq from Egypt. It's interesting to note that Egyptian judge Mohamed El Gionde, who traditionally has difficulty remaining impartial when judging any contest in which Sadiq is competing, did in fact refrain from egging his countryman on or offering advice, thanks to some crisp words from coordinator Ron Davies prior to the judging. Canada's Calvin Nulai came in fourth, and he's hard to fault physically. He had the shape, condition, and proportion that combined to make a winner, but he continually holds his head down both in the lineup and while posing, a habit that gives the impression of flagging confidence. Juan Carlos Lopez of Spain proved to be an ace poser, obviously disappointed with his fifth place today, but he needed a little more size and definition. Tough is the word for the 80-kilogram class. At the prejudging, American John Natashek was called out for so many comparisons that he was gasping or rasping for air. But he stayed with it, and he beat out a bigger Graham Lansfield from Australia. At one time, while being compared, the Australian suffered a muscle spasm in his chest muscle, visible to all by the appearance of a split on his left pectoral. It was plainly bothering him, but a quick drink of water from the wings countered the dehydration within seconds, and Lansfield was back in action. This prompted the German Goliath Irving Noller to also leave the stage for a drink of water, but since permission had not been granted by head judge Jacques Blumhardt, he took the German team manager to task. The Australian was cramping. That's why I allowed him water. Your man was not in pain with the cramp, so he should not have been given water. Japanese Yasushi Koyama captured the audience with his vascularity, but his thighs are too big, slightly bowed, and unaesthetic. When he only made fifth place, the audience booed. In the 90-kilo category, American Rich Gaspari presented the zenith in proportion, and he won out over a huge second Franco Colombo from Germany named Joseph Gromulus. Albert Busick had brought over a party of 48 supporters to root for the German team, and when Gromulus posed, they made more noise than the other 3,000 spectators combined. Kijo Ryman from Finland had the best tan in the contest, and he was well-prepared physically. He looked good, and many of his supporters felt he should have won this class. Sweden's Ulf Larsson, the most popular bodybuilder in the show where the women were concerned, seemed delighted to be trading poses with the world's best. He's another Dave Draper, and he smiled graciously when only managing fourth place, even though he was obviously hoping for more. Mark Boldock from Canada has size and definement, but no color on or shape. He appears to be asymmetrical. He did, however, beat England's Ian Dow, who in his company was too light. Nicely proportioned, possessing perfect posture, but too light in muscularity. Z heavyweights, always the most interesting class, if for no other reason than you get more muscle for your money. The talk was how new NPC American champion Mike Christian would fare. He didn't disappoint. However, in the lineup, it was Holland's Barry DeMay who looked like the leader of the pack. No doubt about it, he appeared to have everything one could hope for. Width, size, color, proportion, cuts. Unlike Christian, he had full calves. Now the judges have a problem. The rule book states that no one is a winner if they do not have a complete physique. The judges overlooked this rule. Or at least they balanced off Christian's strengths with his weak calves. Truly, Christian has enormous strong points. His back and shoulder thickness has no equal in bodybuilding. From the knees up, his most muscular is mind-boggling. There's none better. Two, he beats out DeMay for arm peak, which makes his double biceps pose supreme. So it comes down to the old problem. Do we place a man with a poor body part at the bottom of the list because he's physically incomplete? Or do we credit that weakness with a specific value that can be counteracted by any strong points that he may possess? The judge's job is difficult, especially since audiences react to muscle size and cuts and invariably fail to notice weak points. Christian did indeed get a tumultuous applause, surely a factor in the ultimate decision. Should it have been DeMay? Many opinions at the post-contest party felt it should. But just when you think you know, you recall that densely muscled Christian back, the arms, and that incredible most muscular. And you wonder aloud and thank God that you gave up judging contests some years ago. England's Andrew Searle showed us good proportion in this class with excellent abdominals. Mark Hintz of Canada has a typically rugged physique, but he should learn to hold in his waistline. But surprise, surprise, the Russian from Estonia competing under the Finnish flag was present, none other than Olav Annis. He has a very mobile posing routine, to put it mildly, and the lineup, he appears to be the most rugged of them all. His physique is marred, however, by an unslightly varicose formation on his lower legs, which prompts the cosmetically-minded American fans to wonder why he doesn't get them fixed. Olive is a very definite threat to the heavyweight title in the future. As part of the show, each country vied for a team posing award by posing together in unison. The United States won this trophy not because they gave a coordinated posing routine, but because the members of their team had the overall muscle power to pull off a convincing victory. The team with posing coordination way above any other was Austria. Germany came in third. All in all, these Silver Jubilee Championships were a resounding tribute to the long-sighted organizational acumen of Ben Weider. His self-imposed task of giving bodybuilders world recognition and credibility has not been easy. In spite of the inevitable problems that are involved in bringing a sport from the basement to exalted position of where it stands today, the IFBB has not only survived, but succeeded beyond all bounds. Happy anniversary. And the results in the 70 kilogram or lightweight class, Will Sylvester of England was first. Hermann Hoffen from Germany was second. I think Hermann Hoffen won it the second the next year in 85. Esmet Sadiq from Egypt was third. Calvin Newley from Canada was fourth. Juan Carlos Lopez from Spain was fifth. And Antonio Stella from Italy was sixth. In the 80 kilogram class, the middleweight class, John Natashak from the USA was first. Graham Lansfield from Australia second. Irving Noller from Germany, that was Samir Banut's training partner in 1983 when Samir went over to Germany to train for the Mr. Olympia. He was in third. El Shahat Mabrouk from Egypt was in fourth. Yasushi Koyama from Japan was fifth. And Erwin Note from Belgium was sixth. And then in the 90 kilogram or light heavyweight class, Rich Gaspar from the USA was first. Joseph Gromulus from Germany was second. Joseph would win it the next year in 1985. Kijo Ryman from Finland was third. Ulf Larsson from Sweden was fourth. Mark Baldock from Canada was fifth. And Ian Dow from England was sixth. And then the heavyweights, Mike Christian from the USA was first. Barry DeMay from Holland was second. Olive Annis from Finland was third. Christer Eriksson from Sweden was fourth. Alfred Neugebauer from Austria was fifth. And Mark Hintz from Canada was sixth. Team posing was USA first, Austria second, Germany third. And Barry DeMay would go on to get his pro card the next year, too, but it wouldn't be at the Universe. He competed in the World Games in London, England, and he won his class there, beating out Matt Mendenhall, and that was right after the NPC USA competition. All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed these articles from 1984, and we'll be back next week or the week after with some more articles, unless I could get a guest, so keep your fingers crossed. All right, everyone. Stay safe, keep training hard, and I'll see you guys next week. Take care.